Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Jazzy Jeff Williams.
How dare you? You know how I feel about jazz.
I know.
And I caught the little the reference to that guy, too. Just brought them together.
That's right. Speaking of bringing people together, we also got with us Amy Rattrap.
I mean, Rattrap was kind of fantastic.
I
can't do the accent.
The only time you could ever call a woman a rat and be okay with it. So
true.
We got a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped, or actually about to be dropped, film, actually, because it debuts tomorrow, or actually on the day that you're going to be listening to this, Transformers 1. This film has been talked about, it's been speculated, and everyone's excited to see it, so we have a couple opinions about it as we got a chance to see an early screening of it, and we got our thoughts. You're going to hear Spencer scream. It's going to be fun. So, but before we do any of that wonderful stuff, Spencer, hit us with those opening credits.
Tune in to a brand new episode each and every week,
We've been weekly.
Question mark.
We're trying.
We still have to do a little more to be reliable.
Often.
We're on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We also have threads. It's not in the list still.
And Blue Sky.
This is the worst promo for social media.
Oh, yeah. We are so good. That's right. We got a website. We actually have two websites. We have filmlosophers.com and filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can check out all of our great content there over on the websites. We got everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, allegedly over 300 episodes of your listening pleasure. Check it out. Filmlosophers.com and filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music. If you're looking for it, we got it. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms and find us at The Film Lossophers. Give us a follow or subscribe, listen in, and if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review because we've earned it.
We have.
Yes.
That's right, and we'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. It was funny because the other day I was talking to Amy, and she was unaware that they do fall Emmy awards.
No, I just didn't know when it was happening.
Even though everybody had been talking about the creative Emmys, which was the week before.
I only knew about that because the lead animator for Bob's Burgers had mentioned it, but they're also the animators are on strike. So I'm in this weird spot of like knowing what's happening and not knowing what's happening simultaneously. And I didn't know that the Emmys were on.
I didn't know there was a strike.
Oh, no.
The first time here.
Well, it's the animators and then it's the video game actors.
Well, why don't you get some more information on that while we talk about this for a second? But it just drives me as interesting that there are so many opportunities to celebrate movies and TVs and the creative outlets of a lot of mediums nowadays. However, I think we're getting into the ballpark of like too many of the same thing, like, because we're getting to the point where, yes, there's like the Saturn Awards, which are for like sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And then you have Fangoria's Awards, which are for horror. And then you have like things like what is it called for animators? There's a specific one just for animation. I think they're called the Annies. I think there's the Annies. And then obviously you have, you know, the main Emmys, the Golden Globes, the Oscars. The BAFTAs. Well, obviously the Oscars, I was getting to that. But like I was saying, more the low-key ones, like the BAFTAs, the Oscars, obviously, not to mention all the other award shows that are more geared for specific demographics, like the BET Awards, which are specifically for, you know, African-American demographics, for music, movies, things like that. The CMAs, even though it's just country music, sometimes they incorporate other people that are in that particular scene. I mean, there's just so much. I don't think the Mexicans have anything. I'm now realizing this, that the Spanish speakers don't have anything. We should have like a novelathon or some kind of like the novellis or something. I don't know, but it seems kind of, I'm sad now. Like the Latino people have nothing again.
I'm sorry. I'm Googling as fast as I can. And now I got distracted because I want to see if there's actually something for Mexico
or why
Spain.
Don't you find the information researcher and we can keep
video,
going
like
with
I
this
said,
conversation.
SAG-AFTRA on
the SAG Awards. That's right.
SAG-AFTRA on July 26th of this year, so 2024, initiated a labor strike against all video game companies signed to the Interactive Media Agreement. So this is all video game voice actors that are currently on strike. But I didn't see anything for the animators, and I'm double-checking on that.
Now, when you mean animators, do you mean like cartoon animators, or do you mean... special effects artists.
The Animation Guild.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that them? Did you find it?
Yeah. It's SAG-AFTRA.
Hey, professional researcher. Okay.
Phone, laptop, options, faster typer. Which is a new laptop, by the way, because it's not flying yet, is it?
No, this one specifically does not. Those we're not going to get into the fan curse of my last laptop.
But that's my crazy. Favorite
it is
it
true.
Would take off during the episode. You're,
it was like preemptively, like, oh no, something's happening.
It was
I
like,
must make sure I'm cool.
It was immediately as soon as like it would sound like on the episode, like somebody's drone was taken off off of the table. That's what his computer would sound like every time. And if you go back and listen to our older episodes, it was all those times where everybody stopped talking and then you heard a, ooh, and we're like, and so, yeah, we're going to, like, we just didn't hear a jet take off of the table we were sitting at. But it does look nice and it has a cog on the back of it. I don't know what that means.
It's a framework computer.
It's a framework computer.
It does. And shifting back to the video game performers that are on strike, they're actually on strike for, and it's motion capture performers as well, that are on strike over AI protections after nearly 2 years of negotiations.
You know who needs to strike next? The stunt people, like legitimately. Like I know I'm sounding like it may come off like I'm sounding facetious, but I genuinely think that there needs to be more like awareness of the feats that a lot of these stunt people do. I mean, there was a whole freaking movie about it with the Fall Guy and all the things that Ryan Gosling, not only obviously his stunt doubles did, but also stuff that he did in the movie. Like he actually did do, there's a scene in the film where he's hanging off the back of a truck and he actually did that stunt. Now, mind you, it was in a much more controlled way. They did it where he wasn't going to hurt himself, but it was on a freeway, it was on a bridge, and he was on the back of a truck and it was moving, and that's cool. Or even the scene that's in the trailer where he takes a bump off of getting hit by a car and rolls off, and they've actually gone into detail how he actually learned how to do that properly to take the bump and then roll off the car so he doesn't hurt himself. And Ryan actually picked that up on his own, or not on his own, but he picked it up. And he learned how to do it well enough to make it seem like he knew what he was talking about. Because obviously in the movie, you got to be somebody. If you're going to portray somebody who's a stuntman, in this day and age, you can't just say you're a stuntman. Yeah. So, but I do feel like stunt people really need to get more appreciation for all the work that they're doing. Because if you look at the way movies are going now, I mean, yes, Tom Cruise would probably be the best advocate for this as a means to like get awareness because the man does most of his own stunts. I'm not the biggest fan of Tom Cruise, just ethically or like or in terms of like ideology wise. However, I can appreciate and respect the effort and the work and the time that this man puts into everything he does. And he's what, in his 60s now? I mean, oof.
I don't know.
He's got to be in his late 50s, early 60s by now for everything that he's done and still doing.
He's 62.
He's 62.
He should retire.
He's not going to.
Of course he can't.
No, it's not that he can't. It's that he won't.
Till he's 90.
You know, I mean, he's got
to. Doesn't have to work for Disney for that to happen.
But yeah, I just going back to what we were talking about, like I feel like there's a lot more shows. a lot more award shows out there that kind of just creep up out of nowhere. But I feel like we're missing the mark on like certain key demos, like stunt performers or Mexicans. Like, I feel like these are things that need to be addressed. And I would love to have like an all, you know, Latin appreciation type of award show for both. And make it
MTV Movie Awards Mexico.
It's still MTV. Just because it takes place in Mexico. That doesn't, that's not, no.
The
no, no.
TVE Novelas Award for Best TV. There's one that has novelas. Hold on.
Wait, is that the it's award the Mexican, or the whole?
It's called the Mexican Television Awards. It is a thing. And
what shows do they probably promote? They probably promote everything that's on Telemundo or novelas. There's so much more going on out there.
That's true.
I love,
they are great.
I love the quote that Gabriel Iglesias said so long ago when he first started his stand-up, and he said, he goes, I'm not a Mexican comedian. I am a comedian who happens to be Mexican. And he goes, and the difference, my, you know, special is going to air on Comedy Central, not on Telemundo. and I say that to say, like, there are so many people who carry that moniker, that mindset of like, I'm not going to let my ethnicity define the type of person I want to portray. However, it is an attribute that I wear proudly. You know, it is something that just...
Yeah, because the TVE Novelas Award is only for telenovelas and TV series in Mexico.
That sounds more like a kitschy thing. That's not...
It's literally gone for 38 years.
A kitschy... Yeah, novelas have been going on for a lot longer.
I know.
So why did you just sound like you were trying to do a Mexican accent?
I wasn't.
I know.
You remember this part that my grandfather is Mexican, right?
And yet, here you are.
Yeah.
So, speaking
of... I am here. I was waiting for an I can transform you joke, not like, let's poke at Amy's ethnicity.
I wouldn't even begin to say something like that.
Yeah. There's lots of things you don't say.
Speaking of changing people, that does bring us to our conversation of the evening, and that is... our conversation on Transformers 1. This film has been long awaited by a lot of people, and honestly, we were excited to go check out an early screening of it, and we got a lot to say. So without further ado, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis? Goodness.
In the untold origin story of Optimus Prime and Megatron, better known as sworn enemies, two Autobots who were friends bonded like brothers changed the fate of Cybertron forever.
Directed by Josh Cooley, the film stars Chris Hemsworth, Brian Tyree Henry, Scarlett Johansson, Keegan-Michael Key, Steve Buscemi, with Lawrence Fishburne and John Hamm. A couple key pieces about the film. Transformers 1 is the first Transformers theatrical animated film in 38 years. No, you're right.
Jimmy Crispers.
Whatever. In 38 years since the Transformers, the movie from 1986. Another key piece of information, Chris Hemsworth had actually joined the project after being impressed with the screenplay. Hemsworth made efforts not to use his regular speaking voice for Optimus Prime. In fact, he actually worked with Peter Cullen to get the right voice for a younger Optimus Prime. In contrast, as per the request by the director, Josh Cooley, Keegan-Michael Key remained close to his regular speaking voice for Bumblebee. And I have to admit, I am becoming a huge fan of Keegan-Michael Key's voice work, voiceover work. I wasn't when Key and Peele ended and Keegan-Michael Key kind of started doing his own thing and whatnot. Like, it was okay, but he wasn't hitting kind of like the same cool, fun nerve that like everything that Jordan Peele was already doing, which Jordan Peele was moving towards horror and suspense. So that kind of hit on something that I would gravitate to. Keegan, I wasn't too much of a fan. It wasn't until he started doing voiceover work, and then he like knocked it out of the park with Toad in the Super Mario Brothers movie. And I've become a fan because I loved his role in this, the manic. We'll get into all that. Sorry. But I honestly feel like I'm excited every time I see him come up now in any future project. As before, I was like, yeah, I'm good now. And then last but not least, the film had been in development since 2015 when a writer's room was set up to expand the Transformers film franchise after the success of Transformers Age of Extinction in 2014.
So I'd like to talk about that sentence.
Oh, boy.
Age of Extinction was a success?
Well, so that was a copy-paste from information given.
I'm just going to leave it alone.
Isn't this the one with him riding a dinosaur?
It is.
And a sword?
No. No. That was the last night.
I must have copy-pasted the sword and the dinosaur together then.
It feels like they're both supposed to be there.
No, they're not. Gosh. I mean, if you're gonna slog through like muck and gunk, you should like have a recognition of like where the slog and the gunk was really bad versus the parts where it was like, it was bad, but it was not as bad.
I disagree with this. It was all bad.
I feel like we have to watch these and do like a live
stream. No.
Why?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, we might
Are we
going
to have another version of Love Actually? We're really, really skunked.
Maybe.
We're not going to make it through the first one.
We didn't get through the one movie.
I know,
that
it took
night.
Us an entire weekend.
Here's the thing. The previous Transformers movies, I have clearly stated that I was done with this franchise.
You did.
And then...
The Fire Nation attack.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Basically. Like, they keep putting out new ones, and Eddie keeps putting it on the schedule, and I'm like, well, he sat through my crap. I guess I'll sit through his.
Hey, I'm not the one who bought the tickets for this particular movie.
Yes, I bought the tickets because I was like, let's get it out of the way and be done with it.
And it... Yeah, it wasn't a bad time.
No, it wasn't a bad time. I think it was a very good time, and I want to talk about it.
All right. So, Spencer's so salty.
Just a little bit of salt. Just a little sprinkling.
So, obviously, as we dive into this conversation, we are going to be talking about slight spoilers of this film. It just dropped, but in order for us to get... I mean, honestly, unless you've been living under a rock, like, there's no way that you're unaware of any of this story. Like,
even
or
vaguely.
At least, even vaguely. So we might get into spoilers, might get into bigger spoilers or smaller spoilers. Who knows? But you've been warned. Spoiler alert. Mm. So first things first, let's dive into kind of the history we have with Transformers. Now, I know as for myself, I'm a fan of the series and the franchise, but I would venture to say that you, Spencer, might actually be a bigger fan than I am.
No.
Or you're just a bigger like hater of the Bay franchise. And it's just because I feel like that permeates more in terms of like your relationship with this franchise than I would say your love of it.
Yeah. Because I wanted to love it, the first one. But, like it was... Okay, Linkin Park song at the end was great. But, like, there's just things over time in this franchise that have just been really not where they should have been.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, I was a big fan of Beast Wars.
Beast Wars, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that's where a majority...
And then that movie came out.
Mm.
I honestly forgot about that. like I'm not even joking right now. I was like, I should make a Beast Wars movie. That'd be killer. And then someone said something to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that did happen. And I was upset. I forgot all about it.
Trauma can be.
Because like when this was on the schedule, I'm like, man, it's been a while since there's been a Transformers movie. The last one they did was Bumblebee. Right.
You forgot the one that had Morty from that one Purge episode.
What are we talking about?
That Transformers when Anthony Ramos turns into the Transformer himself and he looks like Morty from the Purge episode.
Oh, that was the
what?
No, that was the most recent one.
That happened.
It wasn't Bumblebee.
Okay, here's the thing. I don't know what happened in Rise of the Beast.
You don't remember?
Like, this isn't, like, me playing up a bit. I honestly do not remember that movie at all. I know Anthony Ramos had a younger brother. They were poor.
Yeah, that was Transformers. Rise of the Beast. End. You remember? It was Rise of the Beast. It was Rise of the Beast. Oh my gosh, you forgot that part where he was like, burp, 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 and he got all up armored.
Anthony Ramis was a Transformer.
They put him inside of like a suit that was parts of the other Transformers.
Oh yeah.
And then he started running up the big long plank towards the giant spacey shippy thing, and he was like, look at me.
And then at the end of the movie, wasn't there like a Nick Fury knockoff who was like, I'm here to adventure?
Yes, because it was for G.I. Joe. Because he was like, we want to talk to you. You're not a Wick-Wicky, but...
Oh, God. Okay.
I love that joke. I'm not going to lie. If there's one thing that I can appreciate about the live-action Transformers is the fact that Shia LaBeouf was whatever Wick-Wicky, and his last name was Wick-Wicky. It's so dumb.
Which made no sense at all in any of it.
It's
but
perfect. It's so
dumb. I can't find the picture of it, but he literally looks like Morty when he's in that robot costume doing the Purge. It feels so good. You know, all that.
Yeah. Oh, dang. That's right.
So, I think we can equate that your hate is stronger than...
I love Beast Wars.
But how do you feel about Michael Bay and his Transformers?
I'm not the biggest fan. I feel like the first movie was probably okay for the time, but like, it's downhill after that.
I believe the last time we reviewed a Transformers movie, you were screaming by the end of it. Because I believe that was the episode we had Logan on.
Yeah.
And you were both yelling.
Angrily, together, and separately. It was not a cacophony. It was a chorus of rage.
You know, sometimes when two people come together to fight a cause, they really just bond with each other, you know?
Apparently there was much rage and it worked.
So, Ames, what is your history or your knowledge of Transformers and in all earnesty, like, where do you find the majority of your experience with them?
Yeah, so the majority of my experience actually kind of mirrors Spencer's, because when I was a kid, Beast Wars was what I watched for Transformers. And I'm not going to lie, when you tell me that I'm Rat Trap, I'm okay with that, because Rat Trap was fantastic. Yes. But it was also kind of where I was at in the phase of watching cartoons, too, because I also watched a lot of Reboot. It was like right in that niche. Prior to that, I was aware of Transformers as a whole. I'd never seen the 86 movie, so I feel a little bad.
But you've never seen it? Mm-mm. Mm. Okay. Okay.
I just feel like, and...
No, I'm listening. I'm giving it space.
But I was also aware of the continuation in comics. The toy lines never seemed to die. And so I got a cursory knowledge from Beast Wars for the show, and a better understanding and kind of an expectation of what's going on in there. I watched the first Transformers. I watched I think I watched the one where he rode the dinosaur.
I think that's the Age of Extinction.
Yeah. And then
because Stanley Tucci reappears in The Last Knight.
Okay, so then I saw Last Knight, Age of Extinction, the very first one, Bumblebee.
Last Knight is the last movie.
Okay, so then good. Bumblebee. And then The Rise of the Beasts. And then this. So to say I know a lot about Transformers is a lie. It's a very good lie. But yeah, I don't have as much rage. I don't think
anybody does, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I take kind of a... And this would be a great talking, like, conversational piece. But I look at it kind of like this is American Mechs, except
more
people-based.
So 2007 had Transformers. 2009 had Revenge of the Fallen. 2011 had Dark of the Moon.
Didn't watch.
Age of Extinction was 2014. And 2017 was The Last Knight. Not to downplay it, but then the sixth film, which was Bumblebee, came out. And then in... 2018, well, that came out in 2018, and then 2023's Rise of the Beast.
That is crazy to me.
That was last year.
So little about this movie.
Rise of the Beast
that came out last year.
With what's his name? What's that comedian's name? The one that was dating Kim Kardashian from SNL.
Pete
Davidson.
I'm like, it's a Pete.
Yeah. Who played Mirage, I believe.
That's right.
We're literally gonna have to re-listen to that last episode.
We're gonna re-listen to it because
that's ridiculous if you can't even remember that much.
No, the problem is I can't find a picture of him looking like
I've tried.
Morty. Yeah, it's not in here.
It's nowhere.
It's like Purge.
It's almost like the movie never came out and doesn't exist.
This is not a Mandela effect. Okay, it happened.
No, this is not my conspiracy theory. It didn't release.
It released, and you talked about it at length. While Amy looks for that,
I'm aggressively looking for this. By the way,
I mean I've been a fan of Transformers since I was a kid. Like, I remember watching the show right when I was young. I remember my folks buying me the Transformers toys and breaking them apart so that way I can rebuild them back together and in some form or fashion to say I transformed it. I was a huge fan of the main cartoon series. I saw a little bit of Beast Wars when it was on TV, but because it was on Fox, I don't know. Wasn't it on Fox for you guys?
Yeah, but
it was on Fox Kids.
Yeah, I'm just wondering why that's a problem.
Well, because
remember the Texas thing where we had that entire like good 10 to 15 minutes we talked about what Texas got in and we didn't.
We had the WB.
We had WB too, but you had cooler stuff than us when we talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Because
you were watching Dragon Ball and we weren't.
Yeah. I was on television.
It happened.
So like there were things that were on like the WB and whatnot I didn't always watch Beast Wars. I believe actually Beast Wars was on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So wasn't it on Saturday for you guys?
I had it Saturday and then on the rare. No, it was on Saturdays.
Yeah, it was on
because
Saturdays
my brain
for
was
me.
Like, maybe it was an afternoon cartoon. And I was like, no.
It was a morning cartoon here.
Yeah. It was mornings. That's where I was like, so it would have been Saturday.
Well, so it was on
weekday mornings.
Yeah, weekdays. It was like early in the morning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the 6 o'clock hour, I want to say 6:30.
So I didn't really watch it all the time. Also for the fact that there were other things that were like playing at the time. So, but outside of that, like I was a huge fan of the Transformers, other cartoons, Transformers Prime, the Transformers. The more recent ones like War for Cybertron. There was a Machinima Transformers series where actually the individual who did the narration for our intro, he actually played Optimus Prime in the new series. Ames, what are you doing over there?
I found it. Hold on. Let me turn up the brightness because it's bad.
Yeah, that does not look.
Let me see.
I'm glad you purged it from your mind.
That's what he looked like.
As a quick aside, I brought up a list of everything else we reviewed that year.
Uh-huh.
And I can literally remember at least one scene from all of these other movies, even the terrible ones. But this one.
This one you just entirely purged?
Absolutely not, no.
Wow.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and we talked about 2025 Armageddon that year.
Oh my gosh, we did. Okay.
I'm struggling to remember that one.
No, that's one
the
that
one where
would
was
be...
everything that was everything squished all in there together. That was from
2022.
No, it was
the film was made in like 2022, but it was made as a celebration of everything.
And it was everything.
Asylum. So I again we have a lot of cool ties to the franchise as well, like with the wonderful voiceover work with John what is his name? Oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. The gentleman who does our intro on his trailers, the movie trailer guy.
I just call him the movie trailer guy. I don't know John's last name. That's
I also
not
don't
my
know
fault.
John's last name.
I've always called him the movie trailer guy. I'm sorry, John, if you're listening to this.
I'm literally going to look.
You're going to be like, John.
John Bailey.
John Bailey, yes.
Yay. Thank you, John Bailey. Sorry about just calling you the movie trailer guy. Yeah. And he just pulls up the phone number.
Well, it's
nobody's
not a video podcast.
This.
So.
It's not a video podcast.
And ever since then, in fact, I believe you might want to check this and see, but I believe he had a role in this film as well. But
I thought I heard his voice at some point.
But yeah, and then moving towards like the comic book series, obviously with the influx of comic books and whatnot, I wasn't the biggest fan of the Transformers films.
Soundwave.
He was Soundwave. Oh, there you go.
Yay.
But when it came to Michael Bay doing Michael Bay stuff, nobody Michael Bayed like Michael Bay.
That is true.
And here's the thing. I entertained maybe the first two. The first one, obviously, as Spencer mentioned, had a killer soundtrack. That Meteora soundtrack that accompanied that, like, oh my gosh, so incredible. To hear Peter Cullen do the Transformers voice behind one of those songs in that end sequence is, it's
Peter
it's
Cullen.
A vibe.
It's been a while since I've seen that.
You're like, I could, you're thinking, you're like, I could just start playing it in my ears and I was going to know.
And then the second one happened and we can easily now like trail to when Shia LaBeouf started going off his rocker because it was that particular film.
See, he was going crazy in that film too.
And I would just, I didn't watch it. So I'm absolved.
No.
Yes, I am.
Absolved? What?
No.
Holes. That's all I'm getting. Holes.
No. Yeah, I think we're going to have to watch these movies again.
No,
like,
thank you.
We're going to have to sit down and watch them in a given weekend.
Why?
Because.
That's.
Because you obviously forgotten.
Yes, for good reason.
No, purged. Not for good reason.
Purged, listen, I told you.
We've been through so much as a society.
Very
I don't
true.
Know if I can handle that, man. If it got deleted, it got deleted for a good reason.
Is that so?
Safety purposes.
Boo me all you want, sir.
That's just rude.
Yes, you are. So moving forward, let's talk about the expectations that we had coming into this film. Obviously, we've all seen most of the trailers. There was a lot of speculation as to the direction this film was going. We obviously knew it was going to be an origin story. So let's start with Amy. Amy, what were some of your expectations coming into this movie?
Expectations coming in, I was a little actually apprehensive. Not because I was like, oh, this is going to ruin Transformers. I'm so used to.
They're going
to
take away my WidWiki name. Like, too late.
Too late. No, I think since Peter Cullen has been such a literal staple, he's the Kevin Conroy of Transformers, period. Hard stop. And that's one of those things that when they were bringing Peter Hemsworth, and I didn't say Helmsworth, look at that.
Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah, Peter.
You still failed. Womp, 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 womp.
Everybody.
There we go.
No, the womp, womp. It's not a boo. It's a womp, womp. Even though I can appreciate that, though. No, I think I just kind of merged them. But just in that. In bringing in Hemsworth, I didn't know how I was going to feel, so I was really apprehensive.
Bringing in who?
Hemsworth.
Okay.
I didn't say Helms. I said Hems, even though I might not get his first name right, so we're just going to leave that off the table.
Chris? You can't get Chris right?
No, I said Peter.
She's thinking of Family Guy now.
Peter. But so apprehensive, but willing to give it a shot because I do appreciate everything that all of our animators have been working on for so long. Mm-hmm. Spencer.
I mean, I feel like I pretty much said it at the top. I bought the tickets to get this movie out of the way because it was Transformers and I had very low
expectations. Spencer has been jaded for the last 15 years.
Very jaded. When like... The good movies are Bumblebee back in 2018.
You know, for the entirety that the MCU has been around, that's how long you've been jaded over these Transformers movies. I just realized that. That is scary.
Well, they've been doing it wrong for a long time. Like, I'm sorry. What do you want from me?
No, your honesty is appreciated, though. You're like, listen, it's been bad. It's been bad. And it keeps getting bad.
Yeah.
I mean, Bumblebee wasn't that bad.
I mean, comparatively now.
Yeah. And
also, that's another one where there's like blank spots. I remember there being like some really good moments.
Did you know Kate Bishop? The what is her name?
Is that her?
Haley Steinfeld.
Yeah.
She's the girl that MT's been crushing on for ages.
Kate Bishop?
Kate Bishop.
Haley Steinfeld?
Yes.
She's in the Bumblebee movie. John Cena's in the Bumblebee movie.
John Cena's in the Bumblebee
movie. Oh, wait. Is John Cena in the Bumblebee
He's the main guy. He's the guy. He's the soldier. He's the one who ends up helping him at the end. Angela Bassett's in that movie.
What? What are you talking about?
She's a Decepticon.
That's right. She is. Wait,
actually, that sounds familiar.
Because, oh, yeah.
What is happening here?
It's all meshed together.
My brain was just like, no, done. Ow, it's deleted. It's gone.
It's not, because it's out there.
Not in our mind, apparently.
No, not in Spencer's mind.
There was one Transformers movie. It's from 2009. And so that sums up my expectations going into this one.
Glenn Turman, well-known, famous black actor.
Sorry, my brain just went, Michelle Yeoh is not in Bumblebee. But I love her. Yeah. Her and Angela Bassett in a movie I'd watch. Wait, I have watched.
But wasn't she in...
That was Gunpowder Milkshake. Sorry. Got distracted. Wait. What?
Justin Theroux was in it.
What?
He played Dropkick, which is Rory from Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Oh. Steve Bloom was in it as Wheeljack.
Wait, wasn't Michelle...
John Bailey played Shockwave and then Soundwave in that one. Yep.
Yeah. Michelle Yeoh was in Rise of the Beast, but you don't remember that movie at all.
Yeah, she was the...
She was an eagle or something?
It's like he's woken from amnesia or something.
But literally my brain went like, oh, I would really see... Because my brain was like, Angela Bassett and Michelle Yeoh are in the same movie. And then I was like, wait, no, they're not in a Transformers movie together. They're in a Netflix movie together. And that's why I said that. So, but no, separate... What, Spencer?
I don't know what's happening.
We need to reset.
I told you we need to rewatch these movies.
I already did it once for the podcast.
Ron Perlman was Optimus Primal in that one.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Peter Dinklage was Scourge.
You can stop talking about that movie, thank you.
Okay, so in other words.
Liza Koshy was RC.
You're about to say Liza Minnelli.
Liza Koshy played RC. John DiMaggio was Transit or Stratosphere.
So
Coleman Domingo was Unicron in that one.
No idea who that is.
Coleman Domingo? Coleman Domingo. As I show you the... You don't know who that man is?
No.
That man is a treasure.
He's from Police Academy, and I haven't even seen Police Academy, Ames. And I know him.
Wheeljack in that movie was Danny Rojas. I didn't
that's
even.
That's right. Oh my gosh, and his little glasses. Yes. We have a Ted Lasso fan that's going to be very excited about that. Okay, sorry. What are your expectations before you just?
I'm getting
here
excited
for like
here. Just awakening Spencer's like synapses. Honestly, my expectations coming into this. It looked interesting. It looked, obviously, as stated before, we haven't had an animated Transformers film in ages, and I wanted to see something fun, and it just looked like it was going to be interesting. I did have a little trepidation going into the theater, because as much as I wanted it to succeed, I'm also aware of the current track record of Transformers films, and I don't know, as a fan, as a huge fan of this franchise, I can't take it anymore. I can't take any more heartbreak. Like, I'm not saying that every single live action film has been horrible. I'm saying that they're just not my Transformers films. And I think I can easily say that with the latter five, maybe. Like, I had a good time with the first one. It was interesting. It was a whole unique story. The first one and part of this, and I think mostly the second one as well. After that, like when they started incorporating like what's his name, Mark Wahlberg, and
when you brought up John Cena, I was like, wait, where was John Cena in these movies? Because I remembered was like,
or the one
that Shia LaBeouf, and then it was all Wahlberg. It was Wahlbergers all the way to the end.
And there was that one, I believe it's the first time that Mark Wahlberg is in the films. There's that whole situation with his daughter dating an older guy, and she's like 17 and he's like 18 or 19, and they happen to have a card that explains the Romeo and Juliet law in Texas, which if you were dating before one of the persons becomes the age of 18, then it's okay to continue dating and it's not considered.
Ew.
They had that in the movie. Literally.
I'm really glad I never saw that then.
And it was like, because like Mark Wahlberg is like, hey, what are you doing? Why are you touching my daughter? What's going on? And then it's like, he's like, I can explain, sir. I can explain. Look, here. And he pulls out a card out of his wallet. Like he's got a ton of them there waiting for this situation to happen. And Mark Wahlberg picks it up. He goes, what's this? What's going on? And he looks at it and it's like, it says Romeo and Juliet law. And it explains the law on the card.
Premeditated.
That's predatory.
I don't like that.
What the? How does this?
So again,
does not compute.
So to add to the credence that Spencer has pertaining to like this movie franchise hasn't been on the level for a little while.
Okay, question about this guy. Was he a Decepticon?
He had to be a Decepticon. Please. Please tell me he was a Decepticon.
That only a human could want to think of this kind of evil logic and work and like actually put it through into practice. It gets worse because, like, later on, like, what is her name? The little girl who played, Alien Romulus, the girl who played the pregnant sister,
the one.
So when she was probably like 11 or 12, maybe younger, she plays a young girl in one of these movies. It's literally the movie after that one, and Mark Wahlberg is constantly calling her like little J-Lo.
That's right. You brought up little J-Lo.
And
like
they have her wearing very unique clothing choices.
Unique clothing choices is the way to
where
say
that
it doesn't
like,
match. What?
It's very creepy. Like I think I've said it before with when I've talked about this movie with Chad on the show, where I feel like someone should look into this and
here's
just try
the thing
to
about Transformers. Not all of them, or I will say at least, okay, let me rephrase this. This movie series has a tendency of sexualizing women, and it kind of needs to just calm down.
Yeah.
It's about supposed to be about robots fighting each other. Like, what are we doing?
Well, because apparently they didn't want to bring back in the female robots until much later. They had to sexualize the human ones. Just no.
So moving forward, let's go ahead and kind of push this bus, this broken down bus forward and talk about
Danny
the movie
Rojas,
at hand.
No.
And let's go ahead and talk about first impressions right outside the gate. I want to start with Amy because I want to go to Spencer last because I want his honest opinion after the fact. So let's start with Amy.
I actually really enjoyed it. The vocal performances were unexpectedly great. The story was very easy to follow, and I have thoughts, and I'm going to keep them to myself so we can talk about them later when we expound.
Nice. I also had a good time. I thought this was a well-created, well-rounded story. It's essentially a retcon of the original story that was out there in the universe. One of many, obviously. But if you're talking about the original lore, this is definitely a retcon of that original lore. However, I appreciated this take. I appreciated the efforts put behind it. And I can't wait to talk more about it. Spencer, the man of the hour, your first impressions as soon as I because we saw the film together. I didn't see you hit any walls or break any windows. So
So
Amy,
I was being monitored during my walk.
I was making
hold on.
Sure.
Hold on. So before we even get to Spencer's actual like first impressions, because Amy just totally bogarted this with an actually interesting story. So I have no problem sitting next to Spencer during films because I have sat next to Spencer in movie theaters for the last 15 years. I can earnestly say that.
The fact that you're like, oh my gosh, that's right.
I have literally spent at least, well, probably at the most, like 15 years going to movies, inviting him to screenings, going and actually engaging in different types of films and whatnot. We've been doing this for a while. And so I've gotten used to kind of Spencer's isms when he's watching a film, when he's when he's watching a film in a theater or when he's watching a movie at home. Like, I've figured it out. Like, I even have a system, and I've talked about this before. Yep. I have a system for how engaged Spencer is with the movie. It is the device system. If Spencer actually really, really likes the movie, then he is watching with like a catatonic stare at the screen with his mouth open, and he's actually intaking all the information. If there's a slight disinterest with the movie, he'll have his phone out. If he's not really interested, he'll have his phone and a tablet out. If he's really, really not interested, he'll have his phone, his tablet, and his laptop out.
So how many? Yep.
I've only seen him go to a three device movie one time, and that was for Rocky Horror Picture Show. It was a three device movie for Spencer. I've never seen him handle three devices in one singular time, where he had his laptop on his lap, he had one tablet on one hand, and he had his phone out in the other. And it was a sight to behold. However, Spencer's movie etiquette is different.
Yeah.
Movie theater etiquette.
Movie theater. When he's engaged, he is, again, that catatonic stare where he's looking, his eyes are open, and his mouth is slightly agape, and he's just staring at the screen. He's not moving. His eyes aren't moving. He has like the full wide angle vision. If he's not that interested, if the first step of that, he'll do
a sigh.
He'll do, no. He'll go, It's usually those three sounds. If he's really not interested, he'll do those three sounds coupled with
what? That one, yeah.
Like it starts getting a little bit more audible. If he's really, really not interested, he just falls asleep. So,
or if the seats are warm.
Yeah, I have fallen trapped to accidentally pushing one of those seat warmers.
I was next to you when one of the seats were warm and you fell asleep. And I was like, Spencer. And he went, huh? I'm sorry, the seat's warm.
So I say all that to say, we were in the theater together and the lights came up and Amy is like vehemently talking to Spencer to her left because she's in the middle between the two of us. And I go, what are you guys talking about? And Amy's like, he didn't like the movie. He didn't like the movie. And I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, he didn't blink. He didn't laugh. He didn't move. He didn't do anything.
We also have to preface with when the title card opened and you have the Hasbro title going across. We're like watching it.
Gotten there yet because we're still talking about expectations.
That's where I had like that moment with Spencer where Spencer and I both looked at each other and we're like, the heck was this? And then the farther we get in, there's moments where I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, this is gonna, Spencer's just like not moving and he scooted himself in such a way that he's like farther away from me. And I'm like, did I what? And then I just like started watching out of the corner of my eye.
No.
But there was no blinking. There was no moving. So now that Eddie's weighed in, I know that you're okay. And you were engaged.
Yes.
That helps.
Now that we're back to square one, what were your thoughts as soon as you got out of the theater?
They could have done this the whole time and I've been putting up with all this nonsense. What the heck, man? This movie was great. But like also slightly enraging because of the previous movies.
True.
This was a great starting point. Start here. Get people out of Transformers. I've been screaming that for years.
It's like the Church of Scientology. Just get them out, please. So let's dive into this. Let's go ahead and talk about the film and the different facets of it. And the first thing, obviously, we want to talk about is the performers in this film. Now, obviously, we've mentioned quite a few that already have. Sorry, I'm looking for my notes. That have actually been staples and have actually been talked about. However, let's talk about some of the more not talked about ones, starting with, like, I do want to say, like, Scarlett Johansson. As much as I feel like Scarlett Johansson's vocal performance is kind of sometimes one note when she does it.
She's Scarlett Johansson being Scarlett Johansson with a new face.
In this one, it actually fit. And I have to give her that the props for that. It actually works for her role in this film. Her vocal performance is actually fitting for the character. And it sounds like she's having fun. Like, I'm pretty sure being on a ensemble with somebody who she's worked before with Chris Hemsworth, It makes it fun, makes it enjoyable for, you know, everything that's going to be happening with the film. And yeah, I feel like she was an actual delight to see and to hear in the film.
So. Yeah. I mean, like, as I stated, it's kind of, there's some of the expectation, there's some vocal performances from actors or actresses that are very linear, or it's just them and there's not really much of a stretch either side. And the funny thing is, in this, there was a little bit of give, but not so much as like her performance in the Sing franchise. And she did well, but she was also like one of two women that were represented in the Transformers universe. And I'm like, okay. I mean, she's also, isn't her character supposed to be like Optimus Prime's girlfriend or something like that?
In
the original movie?
Yeah, more or less. In the original series, I don't know about the movie because he doesn't last long in the movie. Mm. But yeah, in the original series, yeah, she does play like his girlfriend, as they state in the movie. So yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody else you guys want to highlight? Well, obviously there should be.
Yeah, because I want to talk about Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah.
Who is playing D16 or Megatron. I can listen to this man talk all day. Like, it was, I know there is a distinct Megatron voice that I can hear in my head, but not as distinct as Optimus Prime. He is consistently multifaceted. I love listening to him not only engage with the people around him, but also just the environment as a whole, and being able to listen to his character arc vocally, and not just, and being able to watch it on screen progress too, was so cool. Like, I like this man a lot. They make me happy.
You know, I love seeing Brian Tyree Henry come back. You know, ever since Bullet Train.
Yeah. Oh, he taught us who's Diesels. I love him.
Like, that really got me paying attention to this guy. So, like, you know, like hearing him again, I was like, yeah. And he did a great job as like early Megatron of, like, you know, believably friendly.
Yeah.
Like, even vaguely, like, I have a dream aspirations, but not fully, like, I'm okay with towing the line, staying in, like, in place. But he was just so dynamic. Like, that's something I didn't think that was something that I actually would have looked forward to in this performance. Mm-hmm. And especially with the way the trailers have been presenting, I was like,
yeah. I think
whatever.
I think the biggest hurdle for any voice actor is creating that arc just through speaking. Like, you can be animated and dynamic and whatever in your voice, and that's fine. But to create the arc where you can audibly hear the transitioning of the character from where they were starting to where they're going to end up, it's impressive. And I, without a doubt, believe Brian Tyree Henry had that in spades when it came to this character, from seeing how he starts out as D16 to how he ends the film as Megatron. Mm. I have to give him credit to work, you know, I have to give him the credit and all the accolades for doing what he did, because honestly, if it was somebody who was already sounding evil in the beginning, I don't know if I would have been as engaged with the character. I don't know if I would have really cared, because I'm like, oh, I know where he's going. He sounds like it now. Cool. Yeah. Whatever.
Well, now I have to ask you a question. So what did you think about John Hamm?
Oh my goodness.
Well, John Hamm always plays somebody who is like a slime ball. Like, yes. He just always, and that's not a discredit to John Hamm. That's just
John Hamm.
John Hamm's ability to create such believability in those kind of roles. So when John Hamm's on the scene, even the animated direction, the animation direction for the character, even starts him out as somebody who's kind of like, yeah, you're supposed to be this, but I don't know. And you're walking around with, you know, an arachnid Autobot. How, you know, trustworthy are they?
Honestly, that should have raised way more questions.
Oh, 100%. So it's like John Hamm, you immediately assume like, okay, something's up with this guy. You don't know what, but you're going to follow it through. Brian Tyree Henry actually gave me the mindset that at one point in time, there was good in him. And not to give away any spoilers, which I won't, but by the end of this film, you have believed that every good part of him is gone. Mm. And it's difficult to create that kind of dynamic flow for a character's arc just with your voice. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you could get the animation to be as dynamic as it needs to be and whatever, and it can do this and that, and it can convey X, Y, and Z. But vocally, I believe, like, I think all three of us can immediately put our finger on the moment where we started seeing the transition happening for, you know, D16 to turn into who he was going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's such a monumental moment because of the fact that everything shifts for the character, not just physically, but even vocally, emotionally in his voice, like all these different elements change with him. And you got to give him credit, like without a doubt. We did mention a couple other individuals, like Amy did mention, or Spencer mentioned John Hamm. Mm-hmm. John Hamm plays the localized sleazeball who's the in-between bad guy until we get to the real crux
actual
of
bad,
the
bad guys.
Well, we get to the crux of the point of the film, which is what everybody wants to see, where we get to the point of the Optimus versus Megatron kind of moment. Mm-hmm. But he's still good. He fits the bill. He plays the role well, and it's definitely believable. Lawrence Fishburne as Alpha Trion. Obviously, my Silver Surfer is back for another wonderful performance, and I loved it. Him playing Alpha Trion, and then like the scene where the mountain gets bombarded, and there he's like, old man, and then he turns into like a Autobot Rhino and just immediately destroys everybody. And it was really fun. And the fact that it's Lawrence Fishburne, can't go wrong.
Yes.
And then of course Steve Buscemi as Starscream was an absolute like delight. For the fact that it's Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
You really can't just go wrong without
Steve Buscemi, period.
Well, and it's Steve Buscemi as Starscream, which his voice fits perfectly for Starscream. So it makes sense. And it was a perfect casting for that role. And then, of course, as we mentioned, the illustrious John Bailey playing Soundwave in the film. It was great to hear him. It's awesome to know that he's in it. We have, like I said, we have a part of this film as a part of this show. So it's really cool. But of course, I do want to go back to the main cast, as we've talked about, and talk about, again, Keegan-Michael Key. Mm-hmm. I feel like this manic personality that he carries with him is so like transferable to whatever character he's doing, and it just fits. Like, we've seen Bumblebee in every other iteration except for the before times in the recent films. And even in the series, like there's not much to say about it. And yet in this one, it's like, okay, the bot who doesn't have a voice is voiced by the man who speaks a million miles a minute.
Mm-hmm. It's so like, brilliant.
It is, like, right?
Because like, just the nonstop stream of consciousness coming out of him the entire movie is fantastic.
And it makes sense. Like, it doesn't skip a beat. It doesn't feel like it's out of place. It's literally like, oh, this is why he lost his voice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great. Like, it's you obviously, again, like Amy just alluded to, you get like, there may have been an intentional removal of his voice card or his voice chip.
It was Optimus.
I know. Like, it's like this Jim moves out of the way as Michael Scott falls into the pond kind of thing. Like, you know, it's like one of those types of situations where like everyone was sleeping and Optimus goes in there and then pulls it out quietly and then goes back and like, we were attacked by the Decepticons. And you know, the only
so terrible.
Like, I feel like that could be the way it goes. But again, Keegan-Michael Key, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the man of the hour, Mr. Chris Hemsworth.
Not Peter Hemsworth.
Not Peter Hemsworth, not Chris Hemsworth.
You know, giving everybody to the student
what
Peter Cullen. I don't know. I think I had a sensor.
She had a stroke in that moment.
I don't know what happened. I went to literally say student of Peter Cullen, and I don't know what came up before that.
You just can't speak correctly when it comes to Peter Cullen.
Apparently, I can't.
No, you can't. That's what I just said.
There we go.
I have to give it. When it comes to actors like Chris Hemsworth, you think immediately when you think Chris Hemsworth, you think Thor. You think, okay, the MCU, he's a physical body. He's a you know, this blonde, muscular dude in a movie. He's a presence. You don't really think a lot about vocal performances. You don't really think a lot about, okay, is he the right fit to play someone as iconic and as memorable as Optimus Prime? Mm. Now, after seeing the film and after knowing what work he put in, I don't know if anybody else could have pulled it off outside of Peter Cullen himself, which would have negated the fact of introducing young Optimus Prime or Orion Pax, however you want to call it. But the fact that he got like some of those lines down correctly in terms of like the tonality, the drawl at the end of it, not so much drawl, but like the drawing out of like certain words, the way that Peter Cullen does, it was a sight to behold.
I'm gonna be honest, you did way better than I was expecting.
100%. 100%.
Expecting to mostly get Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, I thought we were gonna get very akin to Scarlett Johansson. Like it was just gonna be Hemsworth. And yeah.
It was going to be who?
Hemsworth.
Okay, just making sure.
Peter.
I expected not a big shift in tonality or a much, like, I thought he was going to be the entire opposite of Brian Tyree Henry, where we had that vocal growth.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to continually be one note. And mm-hmm. I am happy to say I was not only pleasantly surprised, I was like, okay.
Well, and not just that, but I am happy to state that I think all three of us were pleasantly wrong about assuming, because again, like Amy mentioned, excuse me, when you think about the voice of Optimus Prime, there's really only one voice you hear, and it's Peter Cullen for 38 years, like 38, 39 years, ever since he's been voicing the character. He has been the iconic, what he is, the Kevin Conroy for the Transformers franchise.
Yep.
And then you have somebody like Chris Hemsworth coming in playing the younger version. And again, not to belabor a point, but it's Chris Hemsworth. We don't see a lot of vocal performances out of him that are just vocal. We don't see a lot of dynamic range with that. It's like, yeah, another, like that. That's usually what you're used to, which it's fine. It fits for the moment. It fits for the thing, because he's not so much of a vocal performer. He is a whole performer. He acts with his body. He acts with his face. He acts with all parts of him. And the voice is probably the one that's more towards the back on that like area of expertise scale. Hmm. But when it comes to this film, I believe honestly he probably was the best choice for the amount of time he's put into it, for the amount of work that he put into it, for the amount of research he did. I got to give it to him. He did phenomenal.
Well, and he worked with Peter Cullen to find that middle ground of what a young Optimus Prime Orion Pax would sound like. And I think that even goes to the fact of like somebody that cares not only about the franchise, but cares about the legacy that they're leaving and the mantle that they're taking up. Even if this is like, they don't do another Transformers with Chris Hemsworth, like this still aligns with that, not only vocal performance, but gives the space to understand that transition to be fully Peter Cullen. And I like it.
Yeah. Spencer, any thoughts?
You know, since he's a robot, it could have just been Peter Cullen.
I know.
But I'm actually glad that they didn't go with him, like, and gave, like, you know, a chance, a very risky chance to go with Chris Hemsworth. So. Fantastic job.
Yeah. Should we talk about the story?
Let's move over to the story because, we are running out of time.
We were laughing a lot during the beginning. Listen, it wasn't entirely my fault.
You're already talking still. So again, going into the story, obviously this is an origin story that talks about how it does retcon the original story lore of the franchise. Although it retcons the original lore, however, certain other iterations of the story that have come out since then have actually been a little closer to what this story is like versus older stories. However, in total, just a quick run through. So at this point in time, Orion Pax, who you will come to know as Optimus Prime, and D-16, who you'll come to know as Megatron, are buddies who are miners searching for Energon in the planet of Cybertron that they currently reside. Apparently there is a shortage of Energon, and they are working ceaselessly and tirelessly to mine it from the planet's core, which, if you know the lore, the planet itself is the entirety of Primus, who gave up his life so that the planet could live and create the Autobots. It's a very kind of Roman Greek kind of mythology, mythos kind of thing. And so we get the two who are just miners in this society. However, Orion Pax knows that something's up. D-16 just wants to let things go. It's a very, it's a very Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr kind of situation. And ultimately, Orion gets D-16 to come with him to the surface, where they find out there's a big to-do that's going on the level of the surface, because they've been mining underground. And they come to find out that things are not what it seems, and they are then given the ability to transform, and they must try to figure out a way to right the wrongs that have been happening to their people. All the while, D-16 ends up making this a little bit more personal, and it has a chip on his shoulder, whereas Orion Pax is more of like, we need to free everybody. D-16 is like, I want to get mine. And so the entire film ensues, and chaos happens, and we get the scenes that you would expect to come to in a particular story like this. Yeah, I think that kind of sums it up in short.
It was a pretty good blanket story synopsis. Yeah.
So when it comes to the story like this, yeah, there are very expected notes, and there are a lot of things that you will see coming around the corner. However, the way this film does it, it actually gives you a very exciting and unique perspective of how this is going to happen, because in this particular perspective, you have a very inexperienced Optimus Prime / Orion Pax, and you have still a very not as angry Megatron / D-16 in this. So the situations that come up, you don't expect Optimus to show up and start swinging, you know, his hammer and start shooting guns, or Megatron to show up and turn into a huge blaster and kill people. Like, you don't expect that, because that's not going to happen, because they haven't gotten to that point in this story. So there's a lot of development of each individual person's core and what they believe, which I do believe that Lawrence Fishburne's character,
Alpha Trion,
puts it beautifully in that it's not the cog in the person that ultimately it's not the cog in the person that makes them great. It's the choices that they make.
It's their spark
that defines, or yeah, pretty much that defines who they are. It's a very, you know, Batman, Spider-Man kind of mythos bringing up kind of thing. And I like the way that this story creates that fluidity for their journey, not just as individuals, but what was once a bond being broken in such a way that if you see it, you can obviously understand why it can't be repaired naturally to the human eye. Obviously, with Optimus Prime being Optimus Prime, he always looks for the best and would try to find a way. However, there is a bond that breaks that is very, very disheartening, and it really does kind of build up that moment that you would come to expect from a journey for these two particular characters to where they're going to be.
Yeah. I think that also the story really, it doesn't have any fits and starts. It's consistent and it's fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And it still feels kind of organic as of a story, even though there are those points that you want to hit or those notes that you want to hit. There wasn't a moment where there was a negative lull. And usually I'm used to like, oh, this is a good movie, but, and this one, I was looking at the story as a whole and I'm like, no, this is actually really, really succinct. It knows where it's going and it knows who it wants to bring along for the ride. So that's a very kind of awesome thing to look at.
Yeah.
The movie also does a really good job of like seeding itself before stuff happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there's certain scenarios where like, this doesn't make any sense. Why is this even happening? And then the movie's like, haha, it doesn't make sense. And this is why it's happening. And I'm like, hey, good job. Very well thought out.
Very true. Pertaining to the overall film, like obviously we get a unique hero's journey that we get the both sides of that coin in this particular story. We get the hero succeeding, and then we have the whole the Harvey Dent ideology, the Harvey Dent theory. You either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And ultimately, that's what happens. Without spoiling anything in this movie, that kind of is what happens in this movie that creates the dynamic that we all come to know and love as the power struggle for the Autobots and the Decepticons. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you guys feel really kind of hits as a strong Transformers moment? Outside of the obvious ones, obviously we can do like the full. And that's kind of what I'm alluding to, Ames. Like, because we could do like the full breakdown of the final scene and be like, oh my God, it's, you know, but that's kind of on the nose and it's giving away a lot. Were there any other moments in the film that really kind of resonated for you as a Transformers fan?
I know you leaned over when Alita said one particular line.
Wait, so there's a line early on in the film because Alita is actually the captain, so to speak, over the mining team that D-16 and Orion Pax are on. And Orion Pax is trying to be smooth and trying to say something to her. And she goes, Orion Pax, you don't have the touch. You don't have the
power.
You don't have the power. And I'm like, yes, yes. Nobody would know this unless they saw the first film or knew of the soundtrack. But like, this is literally the theme song to the first film. And I had it at one point in time. I don't want to talk about where it is, but I had it at one point in time. And I remember like they had the whole music video on it, and mind you, and I'm talking about recently, I had it on, I think Shout Factory did like a diamond edition or something like that when it came out. And I got it on Blu-ray and it had like the music video. It was beautiful. Oh my God. And yeah. So, but yeah, I remember that music video. And as soon as she said that, I'm like, she's at the thing. She's at the thing. So.
That's literally what he was like hitting me on the arm, and I'm like, which I knew the song reference, but I didn't know it was so closely tied to Transformers. So like, that's cool. For me, there was one point, and it's not really spoilery, where we're in the medical facility for all the Autobots, and technically, are they all called Autobots before they get designed?
They're all called Autobots.
So it's calling them humans. Perfect.
It's like. Everybody is a human, and you could call everybody humans, but there are certain gangs who would rather call themselves Crips or Bloods. Like, I'm not this, I'm actually that. Like, Spencer's looking like very oddly.
He's thinking
did,
about
did
it.
Did I trigger something?
Well, no.
But it was just a way to define it.
Of the Decepticons as Autobots.
See, because they everybody are. Is an Autobot. Because that was weird. My thing that I was looking at. That everybody's, that. But also everybody is Transformers. But then that was that question of, are they all Autobots? Because there's Autobots and Decepticons where they divide evenly, but everybody's technically a Transformer.
Right.
So I'm struggling. Anyway, we're in the med facility and somebody's being pushed. Ah,
sorry. Ooh. Hold on.
What'd you find?
So the Autobots and Decepticons are two different factions of Transformers robots with different goals and bitter conflict.
So the Transformers. Excellent. Everybody's a Transformer.
Everybody's a Transformer.
Cool.
The Decepticons are descendants of military hardware robots created by the Quintessons on Cybertron, and the Autobots
are not. So. Military, not military. Okay, so they're at a Transformers like med facility, and we see someone being pushed on a gurney, and they're talking to a nurse, and there's a page over the intercom for Dr. Ratchet, and I was just like, oh, I know who that is. I know who that is, because he was the med officer, and he had his little EMT. You're making a face that's like, that's
no,
cute.
No, it's...
But I got really excited, and I was like, I know who that is. So yeah, that was one of those weird, like, Amy understands bits that I'm dumbly proud of.
Spencer, anything for you?
Okay, so I have two.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So first answer is none of it. And this is in reference to previous movies.
Okay.
Because this movie likes Transformers. And most of the previous movies are like, we would like to make money off of Transformers, which are two different things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, this movie has more of a fun, bouncy joy to it, which is really nice. And, like, the characters, you know, they interact with each other. There's banter. And that's the second thing. The characters actually talk to each other.
Yeah.
And that's something that I remember from the show. And I really appreciate that versus talking to whatever dumb human is there this week.
I mean, seeing as there are no dumb humans on
which it, is the best part of the movie.
I mean, I think we also have to give props to Josh Cooley, who directed this. This is his second, I think his second directorial. He did Toy Story 4.
Mm-hmm.
He also directed Riley's First Date, that short, which was fantastic, and it makes you laugh. But I was reading a little bit on this, and apparently there was like the Hasbro, when they were trying to make everybody like come into the same multiverse for their universe, they created a binder called the Book of Revelations or the Binder of Revelations. It's some shenanigans, but it was supposed to basically like the multiverse of all Hasbro, you know, like how we get all of our crossovers. It got put in a drawer. It got put in a drawer. They lost it for forever. And then when Josh Cooley came on board, they go, here's the binder. And he took it and he actually apparently read some of it, but he comes from the house of Pixar, which means that he's coming with that spirit and that life and that reverence for it. And you know that Transformers had to be a part of just like hit, like it was integral and part of who he is too, because like it or not, everybody gets touched by Transformers. And you mentioned that bounce and that life. And I think of it in relation to Transformers 4, where we had Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key. And I'm like, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense.
Okay. If I see Optimus talking to Peppa Pig in one of these future movies, I'm going to lose my damn mind.
Okay. Then I need to rewind real quick, because when I mentioned it earlier in the episode where and we had the talk about like, oh, Spencer, he said, we had the opening title card and it's like Hasbro. We're like, okay, cool. And it's showing like Clue and Monopoly and like the Makes Game sense. Of Life, like all these things and like Dungeons and Dragons. And we're like, okay, okay. And we get to one in the middle and it's just straight up Peppa Pig pops up and it's just a silhouette. And Spencer and I both look at each other and we're like, the what? What? And then it goes back to like something else that it's like an actual board game. And I'm sitting there like, I don't. Peppa Pig? Peppa Pig's a board game?
I have questions about the books at Hasbro now. Like, I didn't before. But I'm like, Peppa Pig's that important that you put her into the logo?
Like,
heck yeah.
Nah. I don't want
to. I am Peppa Pig.
Like, no.
Yeah, no. Get Peter Cullen to voice Peppa Pig. I
will. You could ask AI to do it, and it would.
No, absolutely not.
I want to pay him, but someone's going to make a meme.
By the way, just so you guys know, so the writer for this film is the same guy who wrote Thor Ragnarok.
Hmm.
He wrote Black Widow.
Okay.
He wrote the Godzilla versus Kong movie.
Which one?
Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh. Just the original one. I'm sorry. There's been so many. You know I'm right. Yeah,
but he did also write for 8 episodes of Agent Carter,
which season?
It just says 8 episodes.
That doesn't help me.
He also did the Marvel one-shot for Agent Carter.
That wasn't bad. Yeah. Sorry, I really like Agent Carter. If this is the first time you've ever known this,
perfectly fine.
I love Agent Carter so desperately. It's
he also was a writer for Thunderbolts.
The one that just wait.
The upcoming one? Yeah.
Okay. Because my brain was like, not the old one, right? Okay. But that still makes sense, though. Like, not only direction, but also in writing. So the
he's done a lot
there.
For Marvel, if there's any. Like, so mind you,
Hasbro's like, come here, buddy.
Mind you, not as an official writer, but as a script doctor to come in and do that. And then he did the Marvel one shot for The Consultant when the two agents are talking in that shop. And then a funny thing happened on the way to Thor's hammer,
which was a
Coulson. And then Marvel one shot item 47
short. These are all little shorts.
So, yeah,
that's cool though.
So just to add a little bit more understanding to the thought process there.
Yay! I like that.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go red. So I feel like before we move forward, I think we do need to talk about if there was any genuine highlight or any other misstep or issue that you had with this particular film, as both Amy and I look directly towards Spencer.
I'm not looking towards Spencer. I'm looking off in the middle distance trying to figure out if there's something I can actually talk about that is not a spoiler.
So let's start with Spencer.
Yeah, I'm just going to be real light on this. My highlight is just Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
He, every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah, very true. Ames?
Standout moment and a highlight is that turning point in the transformation of Megatron that literally my heart hurt.
Are we talking about towards the tail end?
Towards the tail end, right before we go into like full transformation, but the like bit, and nobody can see this because it's not a video podcast, so the guys got what I was trying to say.
I know what you're talking
about.
You
know what I'm talking about. But like it is so well done, and it is so frustrating because it is so well done. Like, it is a highlight, and it is simultaneously a pain. Yeah. Like,
I have to admit, mine is similar to Amy's, except my favorite moment actually happens a little bit before that one for Megatron, for D16, technically. And it's the scene where they find the hidden fighters that are somewhere on the surface, and he gets into a fight with someone, and the just demeanor of him changing as he realizes that he can summon this huge gun on his arm, and just the recognizing the power that he holds in that moment. And there's a really great scene where you see his face, you see Optimus's or Orion Pax's face, or no, he's Optimus.
No, he's still Orion.
He's still Orion at that point. Orion's face as he turns and he looks at D16's face, and it's like, it's happening. Mm-hmm. Whether Orion can want to stop it or not, it's happening. And it was in that moment that I was like, just everything about that scene, the weight of it, the amount of like, understanding of this is the path that somebody has chosen definitively. It's a very, very heavy scene. Both the scene that Amy mentioned and the one that I mentioned, they're both really heavy scenes. But yeah,
they're great.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
So this movie passes. If you haven't been hearing us talk, like, It will transform you. Sorry, I'm trying to cut down on the puns. With a not.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're pressing buttons and I got. I was waiting. I was getting scared for that.
There it is.
With a director that not only cares about the property, but a cast of wonderful actors and actresses who are dedicated and committed to bringing a story to life that can be easily shared with fans of this franchise through all ages. I am excited to see what comes next, as well as being so privileged to experience this as a Transformers movie that literally we can just shove the live action ones in the trash can. So I'm definitely
not that Spencer hasn't already done that.
We just don't buy those ones. So I'm actually going to give this a 5 out of 5 because I really enjoyed it and I'd like to go see it again.
Spencer.
So it has just come to my attention.
Uh-oh.
That Rise of the Beast made $439 million at the box office.
Uh-huh. Which makes it a success.
Yes. So there's probably going to be more of those live action.
No. No, we're not talking about that right now.
I know.
I have the Transformers movie. I like.
This is like talking somebody back off the ledge after you've already gotten them.
Spencer, those ones, the live action, are GoBots. Those are GoBots.
He's off the ledge and he's like put his hand out and he goes, you know, the world's not going to get any better.
No.
And he starts putting a leg up on the chair. He goes, and the environment is just going down the tube. And he puts the other leg up there. He goes, and Michael Bay just doesn't stop.
Why did you sound like Spencer when you said that, though?
You know me too well, man.
15 years to sit next to you in a movie theater taught something.
You know, even though I knew it was that long, it's not a number I hear out loud. So I was like, oh, no.
Thanks.
No, it's just,
oh my God.
We're both old.
No, we're not.
We're not
I
old.
I refuse.
Before he's going for us all.
Not today.
Okay, yeah, so this movie was a delightful surprise. Who knew that kicking all the humans out of the Transformers movies would make the Transformers movies dramatically better?
I don't know, that first one had a couple of ideas about that too.
The Wit Wikis.
This movie is just fantastic. I have nothing but good things to say for it. Please make a follow-up to this. Make it live action. Like, not live action. Don't put more people in it. You're doing great. Let's just let's keep the train rolling.
Yeah.
Like this. Like this. As is. Please. Thank you. No updates. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to talk to Hasbro, you know?
Dear Hasbro.
Hasbro. Keep Peppa Pig out of this movie.
No Peppa Pigs.
We don't need the crossover.
Yeah, we're fine.
G.I. Joe is okay. Just leave them alone where they're at.
Gosh. All right, so for a score, I'm going to give it, I'm going to follow Amy, 5 out of 5. That sounds real good. That feels real good. And they did a good job.
I'm just imagining like
Spencer's the man transformed.
The Transformers and the G.I. Joe are like in this big warehouse. And then this pink figure comes in. My daddy says we need to build a team together.
That actually does make sense.
Do
you have your boots?
In terms of Pazderfeld, this film is a phenomenal chapter in the ever-growing Transformers series. As much as I wish we could have had this sooner, I am glad that we had it, period, and I am super excited to revisit this movie as well. This is a movie that definitely can transform, no pun intended, any fan like Spencer who may not be as adept and wanting to see any more live action. This movie could actually change the minds of those types of people, and I do hope that people can still have the love and care they once had as a child or even just as a fan to be reignited by a movie like this. So it does pass for me, and it does get a 5 out of 5 as well. I love the movie. I thought it was great, and I honestly can't wait to see it again. So
yeah.
But that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com or filmlosopherspodcast.com, where we have allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, even movies from our childhood. Everything that you're looking for, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com or filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever we are on socials, which is facebook.com/filmlosophers, and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101, and on Blue Sky at filmlosopherspodcast .bluesky social, whatever.
Something.
It's got a weird URL to it.
Fantastic.
And you can check out all of our great hijinks and all of our extra content over at our Instagram page, as well as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found...
the only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And unfortunately, She needs an update.
She does.
She needs a big old update. She needs an
update. You know, and when we were looking for conversation pieces, she could have thrown in that Steel Magnolias one that she keeps teasing everybody about. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Lospers. Give us a follow or a subscribe and listen in. Let us know how we're doing. Did you watch the film this weekend? Are you a fan of Transformers? Do you feel like we were right on the money, or is this another Michael Bay cash grab?
Michael Bay was not involved in this film, and he's not going to know.
You never know. He's probably somewhere down in like the most executive of executive.
He better not.
Peeking around a corner.
He better not be.
Did they buy it?
If you like
it, can I have another exploding movie now?
If you like it, let us know. Drop us a line in the comments and give us a 5-star review, because we've earned it.
We have.
We really have.
So this was fun, and I'm glad we got a chance to talk about this film. So until next time, yeah.
You lost that from all of us here.
From all of us here at the Film Lospers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Class dismissed.